listening to Contact Chai, a podcast from Mishkan Chicago exploring inspired, down-to-earth Judaism in conversation. I'm your host, Rabbi Lizzie Heideman, and we are in the second week of Counting the Omer, the 49 days between Passover and Shavuot that our tradition observes through a practice of counting, day by day, week by week, for seven complete weeks, assigning each week a spiritual theme: kindness, strength, integration, endurance. Seven themes. Basically, it's just one more opportunity on the Jewish calendar to practice self-reflection and self-refinement, and in turn, to change the world around us. And in that spirit, we're doing a series of interviews throughout the Omer featuring people who have made their life's work an extension of their life's purpose. Last week, we began with chesed, kindness, with guest Rena Rosen. If you missed it, go back and take a listen. This week, we dive into the second theme of the Omer, Gevura, discipline or strength, with two very special guests, very dear to me, Mark Ackler and Harry Gottlieb. Both of these men are entrepreneurs that have spent decades earning their reputations for creativity, problem solving, innovation, but most importantly, menschiness in business and specifically in the tech universe. I will give you snippets of their bios, but the most important thing to lead with here is that these guys are both the real deal. They practice what they preach, and they are not above giving and receiving kind and loving feedback. Mark Ackler is the managing director of Math Venture Partners. Prior to Math, Mark was the senior vice president of new business strategy and innovation for Redbox. He is a serial entrepreneur who has co-founded four companies, too many to list here, as well as being a partner in an earlier venture fund called Kettle Partners. He has an undergraduate degree in social studies education from Purdue University and is a frequent speaker, resource, and ardent champion for the entrepreneurial community. He also teaches entrepreneurship at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Business. Finally, full disclosure, Mark is Mishkan's outgoing board chair and is a quiet, behind-the-scenes pillar and champion of our community. Harry Gottlieb joins us with an equally impressive and lengthy resume. I'll focus on what he's known most for, which is that he's the founder of Jellyvision and Jackbox Games, which you may be familiar with recently because what else was there to do during the pandemic? He specializes in user experience technology, and with that expertise, Harry created a product called Alex, which is now used by companies to help millions and millions of employees select complex things like medical insurance and employee benefits in a way that is simple and engaging. His most recent venture is Unify America, and in it, Harry's goal is nothing short of saving democracy. I invited Mark and Harry to join me, not only because of their hard-earned wisdom on Gevura, strength, which is the theme of this week's Omer, but also because they are just deep-thinking, caring people who try to cultivate community very intentionally wherever they go, including in the workplace. And I find that inspiring, and I think you will too. I'm wondering, when people ask you now, what do you do? And you have more than, like, 5 seconds to, you know, just give the name of a job title. What do you say that you do? And what does that mean to you?
What I say, the spiritual thread that encompasses my life is really about three things. It's joyful creation. I think creation is really hard. And I think if it's not joyful, why do it? So I love creation, but it has to be joyful. I love building communities, and I love teaching empathy. I do that through, I teach at Northwestern at the Kellogg School of Business, and I love doing that. I love being the dumbest guy in the room and just sitting in a room full of really wickedly smart people, engaging in great dialogue and conversation and learning. And I do it through all the work in the nonprofit world, as helping and partnering with you, Lizzie, at Mishkan, and at Upstart, and many of the other nonprofits that I help.
Okay, me too. Same.
I'm remembering Mark a couple of years ago. I don't remember how many years ago it was that we were first introduced, but somebody on our board said, you should get to know Mark Ackler. And so I reached out to you, and like you would come to High Holidays or something. And you invited me and Rachel to come and sit in your office, and we just had a chat and talked, and then we went on our way. And it was, I don't know, a few years after that, that I realized you did that with me and Rachel. You like sized us up. And the result is that you liked us enough to actually like be on our board and then become our board chair. And that made me feel good.
Oh, well, it was such a joy. I mean, it was so much fun getting to know you guys. And the way I think about it is we have multiple kinds of capital. We have intellectual capital, we have social capital, and we have actual money. And I'm constantly thinking through and applying my different forms of capital in the service of people.
Talk to me about spiritual capital. I know that wasn't on your list, but that seems to me, I think, a legitimate fourth kind of support that one could offer, that I wonder if you actually offer that without even realizing.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I think it starts with kindness and just getting outside of yourself and caring about others.
Harry, can you talk to us, like I could ask this to either of you, but can you share the story of sort of your professional journey? You know, what are the parts that for you, looking back over your professional trajectory, are the most important? And that like sitting where you sit now, you value the most?
I look back and I'm surprised a little bit because I began my career as a filmmaker and then was doing interactive software. And so much of my energy was around creating, you know, what in business you'd call product. However, the products that I've made, the films that I've made, those are not the things that I'm most proud of. It's actually, I would say, the cultures that I founded and nurtured. And the relationships that came out of that. Someone was just asking me the other day, how many people met their significant other and ended up having kids after meeting at Jellyvision? And it's quite a few people, but far more than that is there are people who've made their, like some of their closest friends for life. Friends who go back decades, long after they have left Jellyvision or Jackbox.
Can you talk about how did you craft that culture? And what are some of the like touchstones of that culture?
How much time do you have here?
Yeah, really.
Because I invited Harry in my class at Kellogg is about building innovation teams and culture. And I invited Harry to come and talk on that very topic for an hour and a half. And 3 hours later, he was still going.
That's a great story.
No, and nobody was in the room anymore. It was just me at that point.
Talking.
But I found it fascinating. You know, we created culture really deliberately. I really wanted, this was Jellyvision, the original Jellyvision, to be a place where people could be the best version of themselves, could be their whole selves. This was not language we used at the time. This is kind of a little more current language, but that was still what we were trying to do, that you could come and you could be yourself, that you would be given the benefit of the doubt. If you said something like a little bit weird, people didn't jump all over you for that. They would assume positive intent. We also required that people be both kind and honest simultaneously. That's something that is still being preached in both of the companies, the for-profit companies that I founded and that I continue to preach in the non-for-profit company that I recently founded. Because, you know, if you have a place where people aren't kind, nobody wants to work there. And if you have a place where people aren't honest, no one can grow. And also there is no kindness in not being honest. And I think that is a central concept for building any kind of a culture that has the opportunity of allowing people to gain wisdom and also feel like they belong. I think we created a really, really healthy environment. And it wasn't perfect. I mean, God, I mean, there were certainly people who, like, you know, had bad experiences. Nothing's perfect. That actually came out of the vision for having a culture that was like that, for creating cultures that were like that, came out of my experience at summer camp. It's a Jewish summer camp called North Star Camp in Hayward, Wisconsin. And when I was 12, 13, 14, you know, when I was going there, I know that I didn't really completely understand this at the time, but when I looked back on it, it became clear to me that I was living in this microcosm of the way the world could be. Not perfect. It wasn't that, you know, kids weren't ever mean to each other, because they were. But in general, it was a community where you got ahead based on working hard. You got ahead based on, you know, your merit. You got ahead based on your character.
And meaning, like, these aren't things that actually are true for everybody in the world, but what if they could be?
Yeah, I absolutely left there with, like, there it is possible for the world to be this way. It doesn't need to just be in this, like, little camp in Wisconsin.
So I want to transcend and include things that you both said in the context of, we are in this period of time right now between Passover and Shavuot that's called the counting of the Omer. The period is called the Omer, and you count it every single day for 7 weeks. And so each week has a theme. The theme of week one is kindness, sort of like the soft, open-hearted, loving kindness thing. And the theme of week two is Gevura, which means strength, but also, you know, is applied in the sense of, like, discipline, rigor, boundaries. And so, you know, as you're both talking about culture right now, and about culture sort of transcending just the, you know, maybe the dynamic personality of the founder, but how you actually create staying power for, you know, some of the softer values you're talking about, like kindness and honesty, you know, integrity. Where do you see gevura, strength, discipline, boundaries, rigor, fitting in? And how have you seen that in your own life be important?
I mean, what's great about having a company from the really privileged position of being the leader of the company is to point everybody in a particular direction and say, here's what we're going after, and here is why we are going after it. And if you're in a for-profit world, some part of that's going to be making money, but that's usually not that motivating. The bigger motivation is, how is the product or service that you are creating going to make people's lives better? How are you going to help people? How are you going to help your customers? Or, as I say in, you know, the business world, how do you reduce pain? And having everybody work hard and be disciplined and be communicative with each other. Like, it's not fooling around. Like, this is not just, you know, kumbaya. Like, we've got a job to do. And so having the project managers who are setting the schedules and setting the dates and hitting the deadlines, and if there's a problem with hitting the deadline because something comes up, and making the adjustments, the rigor of essentially marching an army towards an end, that's what it makes me think of. And if you're somebody who wants to actually make a change in the world, like, that's absolutely a pivotal part of the whole story. I mean,
yeah, well said, very well said. I've been thinking a lot about courage and the courage of your convictions and having that inner strength, that inner core belief, and to be able to have the discipline to follow through on that and translate that into what Harry is saying, into clarity of vision. And having getting down to the essence of what your vision is, the greater why, and And I always like to say, it's not enough to have that clarity of vision without urgency. And the way you get urgency is why now? So where the real discipline and the rigor and, you know, the strength is the courage, the discipline and the rigor is how do you create a sense of shared urgency? It's not enough to have a vision, but why now? Why? What happens if you don't execute? What happens if you don't exist? And it's like, there's a lot of people who can talk a good game. It's very hard as a leader to get the masses together to focus and execute. And that's where urgency comes in.
And the interesting thing about any organization, and I think this is actually one of the helpful roles that money plays. As money dwindles, that creates a real serious sense of urgency, whether it's a not-for-profit or it's a for-profit. Like, and, you know, I know Mark has been in that situation. I mean, you know, I have almost run out of money 5 times in my life. Like, really, you know, the company's ending kind of moments. And boy, like, rigor, you bet. Focus, you bet. Urgency, you bet. I mean, there is this really interesting thing about money when it's not just about, especially when you're starting stuff off, you're really thinking about, like, look, this is our oxygen. We got to make stuff happen before we run out of oxygen. And it does propel you to whatever the purpose is that you're going after, that's not just about making money. It does propel you to move quickly.
I'm wondering if, you know, as you're in that, you know, sort of swept up in what you're describing, and I remember being inside of that myself, like starting Mishkan, where it was, you know, like driven by a strong sense of purpose. Every conversation I had with anybody ended up coming back to Mishkan, you know, this idea of a thing that I, you know, was starting to do. And I had the MailChimp app in my phone. And anytime I had a date with somebody or, you know, any kind of conversation, I'd say, do you want me to just put you on the email list? I can just, here we go. I got it right here, you know, and that was how we, you know, built our email list. And that was actually very life-giving for me. You know, I drew energy from that. And I definitely, sort of talking about Gevura and boundaries, Shabbat became really important for me because I also needed a break from that pace of movement. And so I'm wondering, how do you put a check on, or do you need to? Have you found it useful to sort of put a check on the sense of urgency that you feel?
You know, there is pacing and timing, and everything has to, everything can't be urgent. So we all have to prioritize. But I'm going to go back to Shabbat. So in my life, I was not a regular observer of Shabbat until I came to Mishkan. And I have to tell you, Marcy and I, when we could be in person, and now on Zoom, we really look forward to Shabbat. It's a really important part of our life. It's an important part of our taking a break. And if you would have said to me 10 years ago, I would be upset and disappointed if I missed Shabbat, I would have looked at you like you were from Mars. And yet now, if I miss a Shabbat, I'm sad, because it is an important break. And I think there's a lot of wisdom. And which brings me back to humility. There's a lot of accumulated wisdom in our culture, in the many generations of our liturgy and writing. And there's an overwhelming sense of humility that I have when I think about, oh, we just because we live today in the current world doesn't mean we have a corner on smarts and insights. And I've really come to deeply appreciate the beauty of our culture and our history and our liturgy, and it's really important.
Yeah, the thing that you don't necessarily get when you're a kid studying for your bar mitzvah, and not because you want to, but because you have to, is that just the wrestling with the texts produces insights. And it's not cookie cutter. It's not that everybody gets the same thing out of interpreting a piece of Torah or some other Jewish text. And it's too bad, because I feel like so much of the world, including many adults who are turned off by religion, have this idea that they take a literalist view of the text, like, this is what the text says, and the people who are religious are the ones who just like believe this as it is. And it's like, wow, that is like completely missing the whole enterprise. Like, that's missing the whole enterprise, which is that some of these texts are actually quite hard. And the interesting thing to do is to take them seriously instead of reject them, and try to figure out what it is that you pull out of it. And it may simply be that it's a disagreement you have with the text. But often you find yourself seeing truth in the text where at the surface level you would never have seen that. You find some sort of insight. So it's, I mean, obviously Israel means to wrestle with God. And so this idea of us being people who wrestle, and that wrestling produces wisdom. And that to me is the central activity of being Jewish.
I want to ask both of you about failure. If you could tell us about a time when either you really blew it or, something you worked really hard on didn't work, and what are the inner resources that got you through it?
I think one of the biggest failures I've had is I got fired as CEO. I was CEO of a company called ME Solutions. And it's a long story. I won't tell you the whole story. The bottom line is the board made the right call. And there was some fighting going on between partners, and I wasn't making it better. I was making it worse. And I had a situation where I didn't stand up for one of my co-founders, one of my partners. And he felt like I was abandoning him. The first thing I had to do is personal accountability. I had to just look myself in the mirror, acknowledge and accept my role and responsibility in it. I think the hardest part for me was actually not only losing a job, but I lost a friend. And I will never, ever do that again. I lack the courage to be honest with that co-founder. So for me, that was a really hard lesson to learn. But I think it really has to do with personal accountability and going back to courage. Really having the courage to understand what happened and why.
Did you ever take advantage of some Yom Kippur to reach out?
I did. And it took many years for him, but I think we got to a place where he knows that I'm genuinely, I have told him in no uncertain terms how I would have acted and differently had I had the chance to relive it, and how profoundly sorry, and I apologize to him. And I think he's accepted it. But yes, I did, Harry.
And it sounds like that experience really changed you moving forward.
I made a promise to myself. I will never, ever do that again. I will always have the courage and the integrity to speak truth, because life's too short.
Which is advice you've given me on more than one occasion that has been bolstering. It's really, I mean, because when you are a leader, founder, person in charge, you have a lot of stakeholders and people who you don't want to disappoint and all of that stuff. And to just sort of be reminded by somebody like you, who I trust a lot, like, say what you mean. Say what you think. Don't run away from it. Life's too short. Is really important. Like, it's you know, the hardest to learn is the least complicated, in the words of the Indigo Girls. But
it's just so important to look somebody in the eye and be able to speak from your heart and your soul, because even no matter how angry they may be, get, they'll know that it's coming from a good place.
I think there's something so powerful about, you know, the sort of the balance of both kindness and honesty and personal accountability. And we're in a moment right now where I think all of those things are really, really important in community, in the world in general, and especially in community. And, you know, if you want to build a community that is radically inclusive and that is really taking care of people, that's going to mean that there are moments when you have to say to somebody something in a kind way that holds their feet to the fire, that helps them sort of recognize a something or other that is honest. And in that way, we learn, and that, like, you would hope that people would be as welcoming, you know. And now let me share the example of my failure, so that other people can learn from that, and then we all grow.
Many of us are so insular, and just so wrapped up in ourselves, in our own lives, in just getting from point A to point B, and the joy of it, the real deep and profound joy of being an active member of a community is so deeply rewarding. And I would just encourage people to think outside of themselves, and however they express it, whether it's part of a religious community or it's part of a work community, but the more that you can give to others and be a part of something larger than yourself, the richer and deeper your life will be.
In the last couple of years, I started wrapping tefillin, and main prayer you say when you wrap tefillin is the Shema. And embedded in the Shema is Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. And Adonai being sort of the God and the creator, the God is everything out there. And Eloheinu as the God that's sort of inside us. And then again, Eloheinu, the God that's out there. And it creates this sort of bookends of, like, there's all the out there and it's also in me. And in your life as a human being, like, you know, you have this consciousness and you're sort of in the middle of all this. But not to forget that you're connected to something larger than yourself, just as you were saying, Mark. So I meditate on that every time I wrap tefillin, and it is a really helpful reminder that it's such a gift being alive. It's the ultimate gift. I mean, there's no gift greater than that, the gift of actually getting to be alive, and to know that so much of what makes the gift a gift is that we're not sitting on an island, is that we're in community and connected to others. Whether you're doing that, whether it's in a workplace or it's a house of worship, or it's inside your own home, I think that's like the central thing that we can walk around with that helps us understand, you know, our place in the world and why are we here. And I think it's to figure out how to love each other.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. I love getting to hear you both reflect on your work journeys, your professional career journeys, through the lens of a human mission that's actually about taking care of people, having empathy for people, loving people, and that if you're able to do that wherever you are, including in the workplace, you will have great success because you will have practiced these foundational aspects of what it means to be a human being. Thank you. Thank you so much. been listening to Contact Chai, a podcast from Mishkan Chicago, a Jewish spiritual community and part of the Jewish Emergent Network. Please tune in next week as we continue our series on the counting of the Omer with our guest, psychologist Joanne Finkelstein, as she explores feminist parenting. If you would like to support our show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews help listeners find our show, and they let us know what you think. One generous reviewer, Chicago Jew, recently wrote, "A really enjoyable exploration of Jewish ideas with fascinating and unexpected guests." Thank you, Chicago Jew. We love hearing from you. This show is produced by our fabulous team at Mishkan. Editing and production of this podcast is by Hannah Rehack. Administrative assistance by Zach Weinberg. And editorial oversight by our Director of Communications, Ashley Donahue. Find out more about Mishkan Chicago at mishkanchicago.org, where you can also make a donation. Many blessings. Kol Tuv. Happy Omer counting.